Tonight's learning is sponsored by Haran Haller in memory of her father, Yosef Eliezer ben Zvi Hirsch, Zichron Levracha, and by Terry and Neil Norman in memory of Terry's father, Yerachmiel Leib ben Beinish, Zichron Levracha. I want to spend one final week talking about the Ramchal's discussion of Gezel at the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph before we move on to subsequent sections of Perek Yud Aleph. I just want to discuss one more theme that emerges, not from any one particular passage. We'll take a look at a couple of different passages, but one final theme on this topic of Gezel. And the final topic that I want to discuss are things that Bezman Hazeh nowadays we wouldn't even have qualms about, that we wouldn't even hesitate about, but from a Torah standpoint, perhaps we should. We started the parak by noting that the Ramchal's whole premise, this whole discussion of Gezel that we've been doing over the course of the past 4 or 5 weeks, the premise is that even though most of us would not engage in outright Gezel of dipping our hand into somebody else's till, of going into somebody else's house and taking their personal property or possessions, their material possessions, nonetheless, there are gray areas where perhaps we are less careful. And we've been discussing some of those gray areas where perhaps we know we should be doing better and we lapse sometimes. I think there are some areas that are so, I guess, our perspective is so dramatically formed by the society around us that I'd say it's not even a gray area in many instances. We don't even think about it. I think we reflexively assume that it's perfectly okay and all right. We even scratch our heads and sometimes wonder what the problem may be. But from a Torah standpoint, there are sensitivities that we need to have that really, again, just should be there, even though they may not always be. So I want to talk about three examples that emerge from the Ramchal's discussion of these Inyana Gezel and Perek Yud Aleph of the Mesillas Yesharim. The first is on page Samech in the Feldheim edition, the bottom paragraph. It says Re'ena b'inyan hahonah. Pay attention, take heed of the prohibition of Ona'ah. Ona'ah is an Isur that emerges from Parshas Behar. It's at the end of Sefer Vayikra, and it's a prohibition of taking excessive profit from a sale. Taking excessive profit from a sale. And he says, "Kama nakel hula adam les patos fli kashel." He says, "Look how easy it is to be enticed and to fall for this avera, for this sin." Kasher lechora yira elo she roi hula l'shtadol liyapos chorasa beinehu anoshim l'stakar biyegel kapov. Because when one is engaged in sales, one, to a certain degree, rightly perceives their goal as attempting to put your best foot forward, make the best image for your wares, for what you're selling, and to make the maximum profit that you can. And you speak to potential purchasers in order to get them to want to make purchases. Again, that is exactly what you're doing when you are a businessman, when you own some kind of shop, when you're selling wares. That is rightly what your role is. But if you cross a narrow line, it turns into Isur. The Yomru Al Kol Zeh Yesh Zariz V'Niskar. He quotes a Gemara in Pesachim that says you're just going to justify anything by saying that you have to hustle. In essence, you really need to work hard, and the people who work hard are going to profit. V'Yad Charutzim Ta'ashir. The hand of the diligent prospers. It's all part of a hard day's work. It's all part of a decent and honest day's work. Amnam Eloya Daktik V'Yishkol Masav Harbe. He says, however, if you're not exceedingly careful, and you really need to carefully weigh your actions and carefully think about how you are approaching things, if you're not careful enough, Hine Tachas Chita Yetzei Chavach. He quotes a pasuk in Iov that in place of the chita of wheat that will grow like a chavach, they translate it here as brier, some type of undesirable produce. Because again, if you're not exceedingly careful about weighing that careful line between proper business practice and going too far, then you will violate this Isur of Ona'a, of Losonu Isha Samiso, of excessive charging for a product. If you advertise it as greater than it actually is, and therefore you charge an amount that is not actually warranted, it's not actually within the range of market value of a product, it's 1/6 more than its actual value, then that actually constitutes an Isur. Now, what's remarkable about that to me is I think a lot of times when you speak to people about the Isur Ona'a, it almost seems, nowadays, lots of people, I think, have a lot of trouble coming to terms with the fact that the Torah prohibits this. I don't understand. It's a mutual transaction. Both parties are agreeing to it. They set a price that for that transaction. Again, both parties are entering into it willingly and willfully. That it's not like anybody's being coerced or compelled to engage in this transaction. What, after all, is the problem? And I think to a large degree that stems from the mentality that we operate under in today's marketplace. I was speaking in a previous Chabura, I spoke about Milton Friedman, who I mentioned as an economist I admire very greatly. He was one of the 20th century's greatest economists. But he extended from economy to a moral philosophy, which again is of course not a Torah moral philosophy. It's not the one that we subscribe to. And frankly, as a moral philosophy, it may have merit in an amoral secular workplace. But if we're comparing it to a Torah moral, they're radically different. Friedman argued that the one moral responsibility of any company or any head of a company is to maximize returns, maximize profit for your shareholders, right? That is the moral imperative of any organization or of any company. Now, again, in the ambiguous secular, amoral world that we live in, maybe there's merit to that. It just keeps everybody narrowly focused, and maybe that's a way of trying to, again, create some kind of moral code that keeps the marketplace working. But if you compare that to a Torah ethic, of course that's not the case. Is the single moral imperative that we have to maximize profits? Adrabah, the Torah prohibits you from maximizing profits if it's going to come to at an excessive price to somebody else, in a literal or figurative sense. If you're going to be charging too much, if it's going to do damage to somebody else, then it is prohibited to maximize your own profits at another person's expense, even if you can do so, and even if the other person would enter into the agreement willingly. You don't say, oh, it's their job to do their research, it's their job to do their fact-checking. If they make a mistake, then it's on them, and it's perfectly moral, and it's a moral imperative for me. Again, the argument would be, in a secular workplace, the argument would be, it's a moral imperative for me to just milk this guy for all he's worth, and to extract as much money as I can, in order to maximize profits. The Torah tells you no, that's not our perspective on things. You want to engage not just in mutually agreed upon business, not just business that engages mutual consent, but business that has a higher standard of moral integrity, whereby you're being honest about an object's objective value, irrespective of whether or not somebody else is going to misplay it or mistake it, and you're going to minimize your own profits. You have a moral imperative to minimize your own profits in order to make sure that you are not causing excessive loss to somebody else. So it's an area where the Torah really forces us to almost rethink the way the marketplace at large nowadays conducts business in the first place. Go back to page Nun Ches for a moment. We have another similar passage that's again, similarly striking. This is, take the second paragraph on page Nun Ches. Here the Ramchal is still working on, again, his introduction to the parak, this whole notion of gazel that is perhaps more ambiguous, or the gray areas of gazel, even though we wouldn't overtly violate stealing, he's highlighting that there are these gray areas. So at the very beginning of page Nun Ches, the first full paragraph there, he says as follows: Kilo amasar nikar umafursam ba'oshik uvagazel hulavado ha'asar elakol shasov sof yagia elav v'yigrom osov kvar hu b'chala iser. It's not just overtly stealing that is prohibited, but any activities that begin to blur lines and may ultimately lead to stealing, they are prohibited as well, he says. Here he quotes a Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Pei Aleph, which uses a striking metaphor. It says, somebody who impedes on his friend's livelihood is compared to infidelity, is compared to adultery, in the language of the Gemara Sanhedrin. And look at the example that he gives. This is what's striking to me. Rabbi Yehuda oser lechenvani. Rabbi Yehuda said it is prohibited for a store owner a store owner can't give out candies to a child in order to accustom them to coming to his store. The lohitiru chachamim elavnesha gam chaver v'cholam la'asos kein. He quotes Gemara Bava Metzia that says the chachamim begrudgingly allowed it because other people are going to engage in that practice. In order to just keep up, you need to do the same. But he says, in an objective, ideal Torah workplace, you wouldn't be able to, again, distribute candies to kids to get them to come into your store so that they'd be accustomed to that space and eventually reach an age when they're purchasing things in that store as well. Now, what Rabbi Yehuda is prohibiting here is what we call advertising. That's what he is prohibiting, right? And again, this is something that we've also touched on in the past. But That is the entire goal nowadays. The entire goal is to create these subliminal messages, and it's only become exacerbated when advertising has mostly moved to the internet and to social media and things like that. It's all about planting subliminal messages, gathering information from people's search histories and things like that, and throwing things at them subtly so that they're accustomed to seeing certain things, and that certain marketing realities kind of seep in, sometimes overtly, sometimes almost subliminally, in order to get them accustomed to purchasing things. Now, I want to be very clear, like, there is this notion of lo itiru el memnesha gam chaver v'chol amazos kein. The Chachamim did recognize that you are allowed to do it because others might do the same, and that is the marketplace that we live in nowadays. I know many very, very fine, outstanding people who work in similar fields, marketing and advertising. Those are just fields that we have nowadays. And again, I know some really sterling people who work in those fields. But just the fact that Chazal are telling us that in an ideal Torah world, right, where you're not operating in this marketplace, there would be no attempts to kind of get people accustomed to coming to your store, because perhaps that might skew their honest judgment or their integrity or their intellectual integrity when making a purchase, is a statement that's almost like from a different universe as far as how the marketplaces operate. There's I think it's one of the Rebbeim, one of my friends told me, he was quoting from one of his Rebbeim in Yeshivat Shalavim, I don't remember who it was. He was recommending the classic self-help book by Dale Carnegie called How to Make Friends and Influence People, which I will proudly say I have never read. But the Rebbe recommended that you read the first part on how to make friends, but cross out. They do the course at Shalavim. Okay, good. But I heard they cross out the how to influence people part. Because again, think about it. Like, the whole premise is you're making friends, but like, think about what the implication is. In order so that you can then influence them, you're giving out klaios v'egozim, in order so that you can then engage in some kind of subtle manipulation in order to serve your own self-ends and self-interests, you know, moving towards something. As opposed to just making friends, because there's value in that. It's always about, again, the subtle influences that are celebrated in modern society and modern culture. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, in an ideal, pristine Torah world, we're not looking to subliminally or in any kind of subtle way influence or warp the minds of people. We're just looking to engage in overt, transparent, and honest discourse. That's really how things would work in the marketplace as well. And then on Samech Beis, you have one more. He has, again, in my mind, what at one point was probably a very straightforward paragraph, but I think, again, in the context of the contemporary marketplace, it really stands out as different. And some would say antiquated, but I think it is quite relevant. Look at page Samach Beis at the top paragraph there. V'im tomar bilvavacha, he says, if you're going to say in your heart, v'eich efshar lanu shalol lehishtadol b'masa'enu umatoneinu l'ratzos eschavirinu ala mekaf al shovyo. How am I going to engage in just honest business? I do need to, if I have a business, if I'm engaged in sales, I do need to make a sale. I do need to make a parnasa. So you're telling me that I can't charge too much, or I can't falsely advertise my product to inflate its price. I can't engage in subliminal advertising. I can't. Oh no! Is inflating, right?
It wasn't falsely advertising.
The first one was falsely advertised, right? The first one is which was inflating the price of my product, making my product seem so much better than it is that I artificially inflate the price. So I can't do that. Fine. I can't engage in, again, the subliminal advertising of Kleos Vegosum. I can't work the social media algorithms to steer them to my site. So what can I do? So what am I allowed to do? His chiluk gadol yesh bedavar. He says there's a very important distinction here. If you're doing something really just to show the quality of a product, you are a car salesman, and you really believe that this is a quality product, this is a quality car, of course you're allowed to show off its features, to really show off genuine qualities that it has, in order so that a potential purchaser is aware of them and can make a purchase that is perhaps in their best interest. The Ramchal says that hishtadlus is entirely appropriate. It's good, it's straight, it exhibits integrity, it's perfect. But if you're doing something to really just over, like to cover up flaws in your product, Einu ela ana av aser. At that point, once you reach that point, that is ona'a and that is prohibited. V'zek klal gadol be'emunas ha'masa v'amatan. He calls it a klal gadol. This is a very important principle when you are engaging in business interactions. Now, once again, there was a point in history when that would have been self-evident. But I think at the current juncture that we are in terms of, again, how the marketplace operates, that's not evident at all. I remember one time when Rina was coming home from business school when she was in NYU, and she was taking a marketing class. And she was marveling at an insight that the professor had made that day. Now, not marveling at its moral character, but at its business acumen. The professor pointed out that there was a point in history, let's say you go back 50 years, when quality of a product was assumed to be an intrinsic value. You build a quality product, and then marketing was about selling your quality product. But quality product was assumed to be intrinsically valuable. He says, current marketing logic dictates that quality of a product is just another one more way to make a sale. There are different ways to sell your product. If it's quality, that's one way of doing it. People are going to like it. Maybe they'll tell their friends about it, and they're going to make sales of it. But that's just one way of doing it. You can also make a lousy product and market it really well. Or you can make, there are all sorts of other ways of making sales. The goal is not to have quality and then sell quality. The goal is just to sell. And if quality is a means towards that goal, then great. But if it's not a means towards that goal, or if there are other means through which you can equally reach that goal, then they don't really have value anymore. So again, it was just a striking point, which from a business standpoint is quite an insight. But from an integrity standpoint, right? Again, if you're abiding by the principle of the Ramchal, the goal should be to honestly, the goal is not just to make a sale. The goal is to engage in an honest representation of what it is you're selling. And again, there could be different, there's a whole range of quality. There could be different price points. There could be different ways of honestly conducting that business too. But when the goal is just to make people want something that perhaps they shouldn't want, or really, again, the chasos is a mumim to really just cover over any potential flaws or drawbacks to a product that you're selling or a service that you're offering, that is not, from a Torah standpoint, that is not engaging in proper business conduct. So it's also just striking to realize that there are these certain ways, significant differences between the Torah's marketplace and the current marketplace, between how just the financial systems operate. And to a large degree, we operate within the systems that exist. And that's acknowledged by Chazal. That's okay, right? Again, Rabbi Yehuda says, other people are able to do it, so you're licensed in doing it also. But even as we do so, we should always bear in mind that the Torah has this higher standard in mind as well. We should always at least have that vision of what the Torah's pristine moral marketplace looks like. And even if our contemporary realities don't accord with it, we at the very least should keep it in mind and do our best to incorporate it to whatever degree we're able, to whatever degree it's possible, in our own business conduct and in our own lives.